Under the cold, dark waters of the loch, 700 feet down, mattressed on mud and blanketed with slime, a boggart lay sleeping. He slept while the winter winds blew and snow fell from heavy grey skies to lie in drifts on the mountains. He slept through the melting of the snow and the birds singing rebirth of spring. When summer warmed the air of Scotland and the heather blossomed purple and the gorse bright gold, still the boggart slept. He had been sleeping there under the water, on and off, for 300 years. Boggarts are mischievous, boggarts are shapeshifters. But one day, long ago, this boggart had met a disaster that destroyed all his sense of mischief and left him permanently stuck in one shape. A very large and peculiar shape. Once in a great while, he would show himself in this shape, to the amazement and dismay of any who happened to see him, but not often. Instead, he slept there on the muddy bottom of his loch, the biggest and deepest loch in the whole of Britain. Trapped in melancholy, he slept for so long that his few remaining fellow boggarts forgot all about him. And even amongst those rare people alive today who can sense the existence of the last old things, scarcely one could have told you that there was a boggart alive and well and sleeping under the dark, cold waters of Loch Ness. James Urquhart McConaghy paced restlessly around the granite floor of his kitchen. It was a cold kitchen, even in summer, for Castle Keep had stone walls 3 feet thick, built against attack not only from long-ago invaders, but from the everlasting Highland wind. The wind blew fitfully tonight, moaning outside the small double-glazed window, and Mr. McConaghy paused in his pacing, looking doubtfully at the windowpane. He had grown uncertain about noises, even apparently natural noises, uncertain about where they came from and who had made them. Castle Keep had not turned out to be the simple place he had expected, but the window was as dark as the sea and sky outside, and nobody was there. He reached for a can of Ovaltine from one of the kitchen cabinets, shining, newly painted white cabinets, added when he had bought and refurbished the castle more than a year ago, and took it to the stove, where a pan of milk was beginning to steam. A mug stood there waiting with a spoon in it. Mr. McConaghy put 2 heaping spoonfuls of the chocolatey powder into his mug, poured on the hot milk and stirred, sniffing gratefully at the comforting, sweet smell. Then he looked up and made a small, horrified noise, like a strangled hiccup. A few inches from his nose, another spoon, also mounded with Ovaltine powder, was rising alone through the air, rapidly but steadily. As he watched, it hovered for a moment, and the Ovaltine in it suddenly vanished, and the spoon, empty again, fell with a clatter to the floor. Mr. McConaghy slowly put down his mug on the kitchen table, and bent, and picked up the fallen spoon. It was perfectly clean. He groaned softly and shook his head. More and more often in the months since he had moved into Castle Keep, he had been seeing things happen that were impossible. Small, insignificant, meaningless things. Things so small that it was possible each time for him to wonder if he hadn't imagined what he saw. Mr. McConaghy had been a lawyer before he retired and bought Castle Keep, and 40 years in the Edinburgh courts had made him a rational, cool-headed man. If he was sure of nothing else, he was sure that everything that happens in this world has a reason. That stolen property vanishes because somebody has taken it. That a murdered man dies because somebody has killed him. When, with no reason at all, he saw a spoon rise vertically into the air and a spoonful of brown powder suddenly disappear, he knew at once that one of 2 fates had befallen him. Either something terrible was happening to his eyesight, or he was going mad. His golden Labrador dog, William, stirred where he had been sleeping in the warm kitchen corner beside the stove and stretched. Then he loped over to Mr. McConaughey and licked his hand, waving his tail. He was a cheerful, affectionate dog, 3 years old, but a puppy at heart. Mr. McConaughey rubbed his head, grateful for company. Then suddenly he let out a shout, and William a shrill, resentful yelp, for William's feathery golden tail had shot vertically up in the air, straight as a ruler, in a movement quite impossible for a dog to achieve on his own. The tail stood stiffly upright for a few seconds, while William turned in a circle, whining in protest. Then, just as suddenly, it dropped again. William stopped turning and waved it a little, experimentally, looking reproachfully at Mr. McConaughey. Mr. McConaughey stared wildly up at the ceiling, hoping for a desperate moment that he might see a string cunningly rigged up by his two small great-nephews as a delayed action device to grab unsuspecting dogs' tails. But there was nothing to be seen. And anyway, the nephews hadn't been near the castle since their Easter vacation 3 months before. There was no help for it. He had to accept the fact that somebody invisible had pulled his dog's tail. "Oh, dear me," said Mr. McConaughey. He reached for his Ovaltine and took an unhappy swig. William licked his hand forgivingly. With the dog trotting beside him, Mr. McConaughey went out of the kitchen along the bright corridor to the library. In all its long history, the castle had been a place of dark corners and dim, lamplit rooms, but now electric lights blazed welcomingly from the forbidding stone walls. Mr. McConaughey liked light, just as he liked rational explanations. So he had replaced the flames of all the ancestral candlesticks and paraffin lamps with a little Japanese diesel generator, which chugged away merrily and almost inaudibly in the castle's dungeon, powering electric lights, toaster, and Mr. McConaughey's aging electric typewriter.